Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And my interview later today, I feel like I'm back on radio, in about 20 minutes, Natalie Pieka. She is a portfolio specialist for Moët Hennessy. And what I appreciate it is Natalie, her journey into wine is still fairly new in comparison with so many other guests that I've had on this pod. So it brings a different perspective. Now, she's worked around wine and with wine for years and years and years. She was a bartender, a manager, supervisor at The Keg for ages. And I wanted to get some of the stories there. So it's just neat to have a different perspective, someone whose journey is just beginning. So that's coming up in a little bit. I want to talk about an event I was at just recently, the Best Ontario Sommelier Competition, BOSC. And this was put on by the Ontario chapter of the Canadian Association of Professional Sommeliers, or CAPS. And it was a wild competition. A couple of people that I know personally, Jules Garten, who was one of the earlier interviews on this pod. She now works at Four Seasons. Jules was in it. She was great. Sam Melanson, who is going to be on the podcast somewhere down the road, he works for Somm Factory with Bruce Waldner, who, as you remember, was one of the first interviews I did, one of the five or six master Somms in all of Canada. And then Jose Luis Fernandez, who's the winner, congratulations to him, the Hamilton Golf and Country Club. And I'll get into their performances. He was great. Bill Morochuk from Backhouse Restaurant Niagara and Rachel Picard at Fresh Restaurants here in Toronto. They were the five competitors. And it's wild. If you're not into wine and you came by to view the night and view the competition, you might be a little confused because, you know, if you compare it to Tiger Woods and the Masters or basketball or NHL playoffs, you know, you can understand why the audience is so zoned in and so enthralled in the action. But for this, you might not. You're like, why is there a large group of people in this ballroom and they are all staring so intently as one individual is doing a mock service or beer tasting or blinding Pinot Noir or, you know, going over a faulted wine menu? And I don't know how to describe it, but when you're into wine and if you've studied it or you've done any of these, you know, if you've gone for your, you know, Quartermaster Sommelier certified and, you know, all those different levels, you have a greater appreciation for just how difficult this is. And I would recommend to everyone, if you ever get a chance, go to one of these competitions. And you know it's serious because the moment, then, and we're all in this large ballroom and the atrium just at Queen and Yonge Street. And everyone for the last hour and a half who got there around 11 or so, you're eating food, you're tasting wine. So, you know, you could have a rowdy crowd. But the moment that the competitors were ready and the competition was about to start, everyone got deathly quiet. It's a respectful level of quiet. It was wild to see. And so basically what it is that each one of these competitors, first thing they do, there's a table of two, and it's two women, and they're celebrating their birthday with a bottle of champagne. And then it's going to be a very specific style of champagne, the ancestral method. And so you're going to have to explain what that's about. And two places in the world where they specialize in that making of that wine. But you have to do everything right. You have to, you know, check the glasses to make sure the stemware, make sure it's clean, put the stemware down at the right spot. You've got to walk clockwise around the table, address the host first. When you open the champagne, your thumb has to always be over the top of it. If it's not at any point, once you take the cage off, your thumb's got to be on top. And if it's not, bam, you're going to fail. The way you open it has to be in a specific way. When the cork is released, it cannot make sound. So these are just some of the things. And you've got to do each and every one of these perfectly as you're being peppered with questions by the two guests. It's nerve-wracking. I've talked about it before. And just my experiences with doing service. And this is at a far higher level. And then you go from that. Then they want you to try three different beers and explain what the beer is, where it's from, what the alcohol level is. Then they put up 20 different slides. And this could be anything from a specific soil type in Spain to a winemaker in Ontario to the owner of Barbarian's restaurant. It's all these crazy slides. and you have 5 seconds to identify. And then it moves on and on. And if you get screwed up early on, you're going to be lost. Then they show you a giant wine menu. And you got to go through and find all the faults. You know, for instance, you know, a wine that is clearly in Ontario and they say it's in Okanagan Valley, or the misspelled Riesling, or wait a minute, that producer doesn't make that wine, or nope, that wine is not from Argentina, it's from Chile. It's all these little things. And for that, you have 90 seconds. From there, you move on to a second table to do service. This time, it's a group of four. It's an old bottle of Chambul Moussigny. A couple of things about the service is that each one of the competitors, they had their own flair, which I appreciated. There's not one, and the point there is there's not one way to do it. There's the correct way to do it, but within those parameters, it does allow for a level of emotion and just bring your own personality. When I did it, I was basically a robot trying not to smile. I was a disaster. Some of the competitors, they ran out of time. The big thing with the I think it was in 1973, which was the idea of Chambul Moussigny, some people were going to decant. And you're watching, oh, no, don't decant. You're not going to have enough time, but you can't say anything. You have to be perfectly quiet. And, you know, Jose offered one table if they wanted any oysters with her bubbly, or Jules. She was the only one that said, would you like different stemware? We always assume with champagne, it's got to be the flutes. But no, good sparkling. You want, take a wine glass. So that was pretty incredible. Just watching, because you know the mistakes that can be made. And when you're actually doing it, you know, you might forget things. And the stress level is far higher than all of us jackasses sitting there at the table, quietly judging and shaming them. And with the wine, the final thing was you had to go through 3 different Pinot Noirs and you had to just identify the appellation and the country. No one got 3 out of 3. Only a couple were able to identify. And the 3 wines, the first was, and I'm just trying to go through my notes here. I really should have had it in front of me. The first was from Willamette Valley, Oregon. The second, Central Otago, South Island, New Zealand. And the final one was Anderson Valley, obviously California, in Sonoma. They didn't do any old world wines. They didn't do any French wines. And they said afterwards, the judges, that, you know, they wanted to do that on purpose. Because sometimes you game the system and you're always assuming there's going to be Burgundy. So they threw that little knuckleball. And I just have to say, again, congratulations to Jose, who was just killing it. Just killing it, especially on the slides, on the Fulton menu. But everyone did a great job. I thought, you know, Jules and Sam really, really shone. And for Bill and Rachel, I think this is one of the first times they've done it. And congratulations for them for how well they did. And just for taking part in it, because it's nerve-wracking. Like, you're in a room where basically every Canadian master somm is there. Like, you are in wine royalty in this room. And, you know, then there's some famous winemakers, and everyone in the industry is there. And congratulations to everyone at CAPS, Sarah D'Amato, Kim Gertler, all the volunteers, everyone who helped make the event go as smoothly as possible. Because remember, yeah, there's wine professionals, and there's, you know, the public invited, they can get a ticket. Anyone can go. It's not private. It's not just to be people in the wine industry. But, you know, you've got a lot of food and wine being served throughout the day. So, you know, you got to be on your toes if you're working an event like that because, you know, people, you have a couple drinks and everyone gets a little bit louder and more boisterous. And it was loud and boisterous by the end. It was a ton of fun. So I would, again, highly recommend, go check it out sometime if there's a sommelier competition. Once, especially if you know sort of the stakes or the amount of training that went into it or the nerves, the amount of work to prepare for it, you will get sucked in. It's as compelling as any sporting event. I mean that. It is absolutely as compelling. In a future podcast, I'm putting together a list of my favorite cheap wine. All of it under, well, there's one that's $21.95, but a lot of it that is under $15, some under $10. So I'm putting together a list of my favorite cheapy wines. A bunch of people are asking about that. But I wanted to get into one final little thing, just a little political thing here in Ontario. And my message to Doug Ford, and let me say, I have voted conservative in the past. I didn't in the most recent provincial election, but I voted conservative in the past. I'll probably vote conservative again. I've no doubt that I will. So this isn't a, you know, partisan, I'm on the left, I'm just going to rip Doug Ford. But there were some laws that have been passed. Some about the taxes eventually are going to go up in 2020 on wines. It sucks, it stinks, but that's just part of life. And, you know, I mean, the LCBO, we get taxed so much, and Ontario wine gets taxed so much. And if you buy wine at a wine boutique, I didn't even know those things existed. What's a wine boutique in Ontario? You're going to pay even more than if you did at the LCBO. But there was two laws that were passed. One, bars, restaurants, golf courses can start serving alcohol at 9 a.m. 7 days a week if they choose. Also, the LCBO and beer stores, as well as authorized grocery stores, could sell alcohol from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. 7 days a week. And my only message here is all of this is fine, except I don't know who you're pandering to, but none of this really impacts my life. I don't mind waiting to 11 a.m., you know, to get booze at a restaurant. You know, if I want to drink in the morning, I'll do what any self-respecting adult would do. I will open up some sparkling or some low-alcohol Riesling in the morning if I feel I need to be drinking booze at 9:30 in the morning. I just wish, this is really just about really priorities and the burning of calories. If I'm the government, deal with more important issues. Things like this shouldn't, I don't think should at all be a part of the agenda. You know, and I hate to go the Captain Obvious moral pulpit easier path of, you know, well, it's all about feeding children and transportation and then housing and the poor. But yeah, those things are all far more important. You know, clean some more parks. I don't know. But I'll just say this. As someone who's been an alcohol enthusiast for a lot of my life, I've never once felt limited here in Ontario getting my drink on. You know, I think one time I tried to go to the LCBO on a Sunday at 6:05 p.m. and it was closed. Hey, that's on me. I could have checked. I could have gone earlier. You know, it really has no impact on my life. I can always find a way to get my drink whenever I need to. So to me, it's just ridiculous rules or laws, excuse me, just something that didn't really need to be done. I mean, it's fine. It's not going to impact my life at all. It just feels like if there's only so many hours a day to try to enact change, if you are a politician, this didn't feel like the best way of doing it. Anyway, that's it for me on the soapbox and just my little rant there. So without further ado, she is a portfolio specialist for Moët Hennessy. We start off by talking about a story. I actually ran into Natalie the night before this interview. I ran into her at a bar because I was being nosy, and she and her friend were talking to the bartender about sparkling. So, of course, I had to. It was a small bar. There wasn't many people there. I was with a small group. And we realized 10 seconds in, wait a minute, I'm interviewing you tomorrow. So, without further ado, as I said, from Moët Hennessy, portfolio specialist, Natalie Pieka. Enjoy.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the... I'm going to do that again. I actually was about to do my other podcast. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm joined by Natalie Pieka, and I already think I just mispronounced your last name. You just told it to me like 10 seconds ago.
No,
how did I do?
No, you did it.
I did it? Okay. Yeah. See, I get so uncomfortable with names that I, even if I think I've done it right, I assume I've screwed up. So that's which is really great for someone who's in broadcasting. And Natalie, I met a while ago at the J.C. Boisset tasting his vodka and his wines at the LCBO. And then I started talking to Natalie, who seems to have a really interesting story, and I wanted to hear more about it. You work for Moët Hennessy Portfolio Specialist, right?
Correct.
And how you were at the Keg for 6 years?
6 years, yep.
And just like bartender, training, all that sort of stuff with staff?
Yep. So I opened up one of the Kegs in Brampton at Bramley, and I was hired as a bartender. Mm-hmm. And then from there for 6 years, I would bartend, serve, and then eventually got into managing as well.
Cool. Well, I want to talk about all that. I want to talk about Moët, but I want to talk about what happened last night. Because one thing I am so nosy about, I am always nosy about two things. What someone is reading and what they're drinking. So I was at a bar last night with my girlfriend and her twin sister and another friend. And it's, you know, we're all sitting there at the bar. And then two girls sit down and I hear them talking about the, with the bartender about the Prosecco. So now I start asking questions. And then in the middle of the conversation, what did we realize?
That you were interviewing me the next day.
Yeah. And we started the worst part. The moment I realized we were talking about sparkling, and then you brought up something about Vogue.
Yeah, I was like, I work for Vogue.
Yeah, and I think right before that, I think I made a comment about, well, you know, Cremant, you know, if you get tired of Vogue.
Yeah, you're like,
and then you said you worked for Vogue, yeah. And I'm like, this is embarrassing. And the moment I realized it was embarrassing was also the moment I realized, oh, that's Natalie, and I'm interviewing her in about 14 hours.
I know. I started looking at you, and I was like, I know him from somewhere. I don't know where. Yeah. Where do I know him from? And the minute you said that, then it clicked for me. And that was just...
Well, because we hadn't seen each other since that day at the LCBO.
For all of maybe 10 minutes as well.
Yeah, exactly. Also, we're going to be trying Nova 7 by Benjamin Bridge. Benjamin Bridge is a really well-known winemaker in Nova Scotia. They do a lot of sparkling. I got this from my friend Elizabeth Davies, who was on a couple podcasts ago. So I figured you specialize in sparkling. We should...
I'm excited.
We should give it a shot. It's made the classic way... But it's from a bunch of Muscat varietals and just stuff from Nova Scotia. I mean, grapes that can handle that sort of weather. So I have no idea what it is. It's only 7.5%. So this is a pretty, you know, it's sort of like almost like a Moscato d'Asti, you know, just like
and a twist off, which is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna pour it. But I was just wondering first if you could explain your current job for people that, you know, when someone says, oh, they're a portfolio specialist, and for you. Mouette and Hennessy, that's some wide range. I was wondering if you could tell people just what you do.
So they've hired me. I work with Charton Hobbs, and they've hired a few of us for a portfolio specialist for Mouette and Hennessy. So all the luxury brands. So obviously all the Mouette. We have Veuve, Ruinart, Krug, Belvedere, Glenmorangie, Artbeg. And then we have a new tequila Volcan that's coming out. And then a few other luxury wines.
And you're headed to Paris on Saturday.
Yeah, I
and
am.
And then champagne.
Yeah, 10-day trip with work. Mm-hmm. I know, hard life, right? Yeah, so we're going to Paris. We're going to Champagne to all the Maisons. And then we're going to Cognac to Hennessy.
Mm-hmm. And this is your first time?
To Champagne and Cognac, yes. I've been to Paris a couple times already.
And how important is that for you just in your job, being able to be there in the location?
I just can't wait to actually go there and see where it all started. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the smell of, you know, the cellars and just all the different like architecture within everything. And then what I'll be tasting and the master blenders and talking to them and understanding their mind and focus on everything that they do.
And you were mentioned before, you got a pretty intense itinerary, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
You're going to
I think that we have maybe one free day.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's like literally you have maybe 2 hours to go get changed between the whole day and dinner.
Yeah. Well, it people think, oh, tough life, but it's a lot of driving, a lot of tasting, a lot of spitting.
There's no sleep.
No sleep. But I imagine you're probably going to do a bunch of tastings early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of tastings everywhere.
Here's the advice I'll give you, and you don't need it, but when I worked for a wine consignment company for a while called Barrel Select, so flew out to Sonoma. And at this place called Ramey Cellars, really good California producer. And we were trying like 14 different wines. And it was not even 10 in the morning. I wasn't spitting enough early on because I'm just like, this is really yummy. And then about halfway into it, I'm like, I'm feeling a little, you know, a slight buzz. I'm like, it's 10:15. I have to spend the entire day with my boss, you know, the owner, and we're going to like 5 different wineries. And I imagine it's going to be the same. You're going to be going from place to place.
I'm sure, yeah.
Spitting is critical for stuff like this.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. And for your day off, just champagne's gorgeous. You'll love it. I mean,
I can't wait.
It is a playground for, I don't want to say alcoholics, but for people, just it's an incredible, beautiful place. I think you'll love it.
No, I can't wait because now they've been, you know, learning everything about it and all the education they've been kind of tossing at us and actually going to the place and being like, oh, this is where, you know, Dom Perignon was. This is where this and the, you know, Veuve Clicquot, you know, where she was and where she lived and everything and kind of breathing that in is really cool. I love the history behind it.
What's the difference in your knowledge of champagne and sparkling now versus, say, one day before you started at the keg?
Completely different.
Yeah.
I was always like, I didn't understand why champagne was more expensive than Prosecco or sparkling wines. The differences behind it, the types of grapes, the methods, the aging, just even the crisp of the bubbles when you like sip Prosecco.
Yeah.
If it's done differently than not actually champagne.
Well, for a lot of people that listen, and this is a wide range. I know there are people that listen that are in the biz and people that are just wanting to learn more about wine. If someone was asking you just, what's the difference between Prosecco and Veuve? What would be the couple like just talking points you're gonna get out there?
Well, it's the grapes for sure, and then it's aging. Aging really matters to it. Like Veuve's gonna be 30 to 36 months minimum of aging, and that's what's gonna bring in the crispness of it, of the structure of the bubbles, having that bready kind of palate to it versus Prosecco. Prosecco generally is usually under 6 months, on average. And, you know, not individually bottled at all. And there's no second fermentation. There's like little things that just nobody really even thinks to even ask about.
Yeah. And the second fermentation, people don't know, that's just where the first fermentation of the wine, making the dry still wine. And then it go, each individual bottle has its own individual fermentation. And that's part one of the many reasons why champagne is so much more expensive than Prosecco. Like the average Prosecco is probably at the LCBO about $14-$13,
give or take,
while champagne low end is probably going to be $55, and that's, you know, when it's like $5-$7 off.
Exactly.
Before we get to, I want to talk to you about the keg, and we're just going to sort of bounce around. And it was funny, we met at the bar and all I'm doing is like, oh, what are you drinking? And do you this, like, are you nosy as well? Like, I see people even with the LCBO bottles, like, what do you got in there? What are you drinking? Like, it's always the one thing for me.
Well, the LCBO is just my favorite store. Yeah. I could spend hours there just looking around and talking to the product consultants. And now that, like, I work with retail with LCBO as well, with my position, I'm in there all the time. So when, you know, and I see a consumer walking around asking questions, I can always come in and be like, oh, you're looking at this champagne, why is that? Or they're confused between Prosecco and champagne. I can talk to them there.
How often have you interrupted a conversation and suddenly got yourself in the middle between the LCBO employees and a customer?
Not very often.
No?
No, not yet at least.
See, I would. I'd be like, excuse, I'd get right, like, you know, I'd just be,
I want them to be on their good sides. Yeah. You know, I got to get things done.
Okay, no, but slide your way in, sort of helpful. Ashley, what is your relationship with the LCBO?
So I just go in there and try to get like listings with all of our brands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Christmas season comes like that, have staff picks.
Yep.
And tastings as well to get them all educated on our brands. So if anyone asks them about, you know, Art Bag and things like that, they'll be like, oh, I just tasted this. Or let me tell you a bit more.
How do you get staff picks on? How difficult is that to because it is important, especially for people that when you're in a large LCBO, it can be intimidating. And it's nice. It's like, oh, okay. This one is got sort of a nod of approval, which I imagine, I don't know what the numbers are, but I imagine it must really help to move a product.
Yeah, it does, especially around the holidays. Same with the point system when they have that. If you have, you know, 94, 96 points on anything, it's going to be already flagged for everyone to go there than anywhere else. It is a bit more difficult because they only have a select few that they can do. And it goes into like maybe a couple wines, couple spirits, and then you have to wait after a 3 months period, I believe, or something like that.
Oh, yeah?
And then they'll revise it and basically your relationship and tastings and trying to get the right people to taste the right things.
Yeah. So you want to taste this?
Of course.
First off, cheers. Thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
So yeah, Nova 7, Nova because Nova Scotia, and 7 because I believe 2007 was their first real commercial year. But
smells fabulous.
Yeah, like just a lot of fragrance.
Oh my goodness.
Fruit. Yeah, what do you smell? What do you get?
I'm getting like a floral to it as well with like, is that apricot or peach?
Yeah, this is light. If I can say the word fun, but I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Because there's a lot, like, to me, a lot, especially in the middle. And you said like apricot and peach.
Yeah.
All over the place here.
But there's like a floralness to it.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. Like this is, you know, because it's low alcohol and I would call it simple done well because, you know, it doesn't have like this crazy depth. But at the same point, there's a lot of flavors going on. This is enjoyable, well put together. This is a great patio. This is a great summer sipping. Like you
even
can.
Even that citrus.
Yeah. And there's a fun orange peel fizz sort of like on the end of it. But yeah, you could just like crush this on easy. A patio in the summer.
Easy drinking for sure.
Yeah, this is really easy drinking. So Nova 7, I don't know how much of it comes to the LCBO.
I was just going
to
ask.
I was going to ask you, how much experience or have you seen at all the LCBOs of Nova, you know, because it's so rare to see East Coast wines, like maybe only once or twice specializing when some of it gets brought in, but that's rare.
Yeah, I don't know. The Wine Rack, is that only just Ontario wines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Wine Rack's all is all Ontario.
And that was delicious.
Mm-hmm. When you what made you start the keg?
Well, I came back from Australia, and then I went back to school because I finished my 3 years and then decided I had enough school.
Yeah.
Took 2 years off, worked, and then went to Australia for a year and then decided to go back to do my honors just in case.
Yeah.
So then I finished that and I was like, I just still didn't know where I wanted to be, and the keg seemed like it'd be fun. I've heard good things. And then I decided just to go in and start working there, and it just turned out to be great.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I heard. Is that you were there for 6 years. Mm-hmm. When I hear about people in restaurants, everyone's bouncing around all the time.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth talked about it a little while back, but I'd love your thoughts about what is it about the keg that keeps people there longer than your average restaurant or bar?
I just think the approach with teamwork and like a family approach to it, and it's just everyone just gets along really well, and you're making great money, and you're everything, like they're professional in where they are and they take care of you, and there's a lot of good staff events that kind of bring people together and they appreciate your hard work, so you kind of stick it out because you're like, this is awesome.
So I want to hear some of the craziest stories at the bar. We'll start with this. Some of the oddest guest complaints or issues.
Okay, so there was one. I don't want to be stereotypical. Okay, perfect.
You don't have to be. You can.
Okay, so there was this lady that was in the dining room, and I was managing at this time. So one of my servers came to me and said, you know, she didn't like her peppers. They were overcooked. And I was like, okay, I'll go back and check her. And then I went there, and she's like, they're overcooked. And I was like, that's fine. Did you want them freshly cooked? She's like, no problem. And then she looked at me, and she said, and your hot sauce is in a side dish. And I was like, yeah, that's how we give it out. She's like, how dare you limit my hot sauce usage?
What?
She's like, how? I don't want to. I didn't come to the keg to beg for hot sauce. Why isn't the bottle on the table? And I'm like, I will bring you the bottle. I just want to let you know that it's keg spec to bring it out in a little ramekin for you. And it's no problem to ask the server for more. We don't have 10 bottles of hot sauce in the back. We have, you know, maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And it's no way for you to beg at the keg. Yeah. That's not what we want you to do. It's just the way that it's presented. It's presentation, which the keg is very big on.
Is that more self-entitlement or victim mentality? What the
self-entitlement.
Yeah.
It was her birthday, which people when they come out on the birthdays just think, you know, they deserve everything. Yeah. And usually it's a lot of people that don't really go out to the keg when it's on special occasions. So a lot of them don't know how to be polite and just come in and go in, think that, you know, you're their servant, and you should be doing everything. Why are you even asking this question? And, you know, it was ridiculous.
That is, okay. How often, like, is that, like, these are the fun stories. I imagine 98% of the time, everyone is fantastic and nice, and, you know, people are usually respectful. Those stories are boring. I'm just curious about just that, that entitlement. Is that, would you say, the most negative thing when it comes to working at the keg, just dealing with that emotion?
Probably. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's always that stereotype too, is that you're just a bartender, you're just a server. They're like, what else are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, we don't have that. Like, are you in school for something? Is that why you're a server? It's like, I probably make more money than you do right now and I don't get taxed. So
that's a good point. I never thought about that. Would be insulting. Like, you don't get that in another job. Like,
no.
As someone, like, I, you know, my main job is I work at TSN, a sports talk radio host. That would be weird to go, oh, so you do that. So what else
do you do?
What else do you do? That is insulting. I never thought, what else do you? Oh, you must be in school.
Yeah. Are you? Because like, this is your side job, right?
Yeah. And the shame of it is like, service is an art. You know, it's not that anyone can do it.
It's true.
It is like, I mean, you know, it's not just patience, but it's also like human psychology. It's also knowing how to read a room, when to come in, how to talk, when to be extra nice, maybe when to be a little bit stern. Like,
exactly.
You've almost got to do a roulette of emotions depending on each and each.
You
got to
feel your crowd.
Yeah. What's the worst? What's worse? Birthday, graduation, staggette.
Mother's Day.
What's that?
Mother's Day.
Oh, okay. Okay, let's explore this. Take me, Natalie, take me to what a bad Mother's Day moment looks like at the Keg.
Every Beyond. Mother's Day, pretty much.
Really?
I mean, it's people who never go out. Mm-hmm. So they're not tipping and they're expecting everything and they're just rude.
Yeah.
And they're just so, like, it's not worth it for the servers that mm-hmm. are working Mother's Day.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't much in Brampton.
And what about just in terms of people waiting? Because the Keg can get packed.
Yeah.
Like I know the one of the downtown ones, when I used to work for a show called Off the Record, our title sponsor was the Keg. And I remember we wanted to set up just a Christmas party for the staff of Off the Record. Not big, like maybe 8 people.
Yeah.
And it was close to Christmas. And they're like, we cannot do it.
That's hard.
Yeah.
It's like all Christmas parties and meetings and things like that. It does get a little crazy.
How tough is Christmas?
Honestly, you just pull through. You start doing doubles and you just kind of, everyone's on the same page, helping each other out. We're all tired, but we're all making money.
Yeah.
And it's just sleep, work, drink, sleep, work, drink.
Yeah. That's got to be, how tough is that? Like I heard that, how tough is it to date someone who doesn't have a restaurant lifestyle when you work in a restaurant?
My last boyfriend who I dated had work at the Keg prior, not when we were together. And he had more of like a, I guess, 9 to 5, but he worked from home. So it wasn't really that much of a difference.
And he'd have understanding.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I remember the Keg. I've never dated someone who's never worked in the industry. And I feel like that might be that they won't know things like that.
Yeah.
But he would be like, oh, I remember this and what 86 is and 3 cheese butter and all this stuff that, you know,
keggers
would know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
so you fit right in when it would be the weekends and come over. So it wouldn't be that much of a difference for me.
Yeah.
But I would think so, that that might be hard.
I think it would. It's not like saying it's not impossible, but I imagine it would be harder for, you know, especially like bartenders or just when you're working late and closing. Like, people don't know that is such a tough lifestyle. And then when you're done work, it's not that you immediately go home, because a lot of times you just need a little bit of just, you need a breath and just relax. And then you have a drink or two with everyone at work. And then you get home and you look up and it's 3:40 in the morning.
Oh, the many times that I woke up with the birds and the sun.
Yeah.
I saw more sunrises and suns at the same time or the same night. You know, it's that happened a lot. But I found that at least with the Brampton Keg, we closed usually at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
during the week and midnight during the weekends. So it wasn't that bad. I'd be out there. I'd be probably finished around midnight or 1. The ones downtown, they go till 2. By the time you're out, it's probably like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So that'd be a bit more tough.
What tips would you give? Because there are we all have different lifestyles. My lifestyle has always been, you know, I go out to restaurants more than the average person, but then I don't spend money on technology and I don't have children. So just more money to spend in other areas. But there's other people, as you say, they don't go out all the time. Sometimes you have a couple kids, you don't have as much money, and you're tired.
100%.
What advice would you give to people who, they want to be nice, but sometimes they don't realize it? Like, people that don't go to restaurants very often, what advice would you give them just so that, hey, if you do these things, it's going to make the other human beings that are serving you, it's going to make everyone's life that much better?
One, listen. Mm-hmm. How many times you go to a table and you're like, hi, excuse me, and there's like, no one pays attention and we're taking orders.
Yeah.
And they ask me what the sides are. And then you go to the next person, like, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What are the sides again? And you like name again. And it happens 5 times. Like, just like, listen, know what you're going to order and just be present. Mm-hmm. Another one would be, at least acknowledge me.
Yeah.
When I sit down, they'll be like, oh, can I have a Pepsi? I'm like, hello to you too. My name's Natalie. I'll be serving you, but sure.
Yeah.
You haven't even taken your coat off. I'll get your Pepsi right now. Like, just be aware of people around. We're people too. And we should be acknowledged that, you know, we'll be serving you. So just give us that respect.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing for sure that I would get people to be more aware. And then just for tipping, $5 on everything doesn't count.
Yeah. What would you rather have at the end of the night? Someone says to you, you were lovely, but I'm sorry I can't tip you. Or I didn't think you were very good. And now I'm sorry I can't tip you. Which one?
Well, I'm obviously the first one.
Yeah.
If it was like, you were horrible, but I'm still giving you $5. Yeah. I'm like, well, thanks. Thanks for the $5. Yeah. At least I'll take that.
Yeah. But you were wonderful.
Yeah.
Here's $5.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
But. I'd rather you not even say anything to me if you're not going to tip me.
Just
walk away.
Slink away.
Because then you kind of put yourself in that weird, awkward, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I would never do that.
What was the toughest part about training staff?
Probably, again, just them listening.
Oh, so they're like the customers.
Yeah. It's just, other people come from other restaurants, and the keg's very good with their training program. They rather have people who weren't at other restaurants, they have that bad habits, and start them from fresh and get them on their plate, because a lot of people come over and like, oh yeah, don't worry, I used to be a bartender. I'm like, that's great, but this is how we do it here.
Yeah.
And you just don't come in already thinking like you know everything.
And when did you start to, like, you said when you got pairing, was there a moment when you realized you were really getting into wine?
Probably the first year or two in. It was just, I got to taste everything off the menu. Mm-hmm. I got involved with hosting like wine trainings for staff and trying to talk to the bar managers to be like, hey, you know what? Like, we don't do this enough. There's a new bottle. We should pick one every month or a few and get everyone on board, because how often do you taste a stag's leap cab?
Yeah.
Not very often. Mm-hmm. And it's not offered by the glass. So how are we supposed to be able to taste it and sell it? If you want us to upsell, we have to be able to try it so we know what we're upselling.
Oh, okay. So let's role play for a second here. Yeah. It's a table, bunch of business guys. They're thinking of going to J-Lore. You want to get them to the Stag's Leap, and it is a superior wine. So you're doing it also for altruistic reasons. You want them to enjoy their wine more, and it also happens it's a step up in price, so that helps everyone. How would you try to nudge them, and not even like some sneaky way, but how would you get them try to purchase the Stag's Leap?
Well, first I would ask them, have they ever tried J-Lore before? Mm-hmm. And generally, they have.
Yes.
So right there, I try to push them off and be like, why don't we try something different? You know how J-Lore is. I've tried the Stag's Leap cab. It's very, very similar to the J-Lore. Just, it's not going to be as fruity. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be that, it's going to be a nice finish, but the actual mouthfeel is not going to be that overly fruity silk. But it's going to be a bit more, I would say, a step down from that. And it goes really well. And I'm like, what are you eating?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we're going to have, you know, the rib steak with the grilled shrimp and this and that. And we're also going to have some of the scallops and bacon. I'm like, perfect. If you take with the J-Lore, that might enhance a little bit more sweetness to it. Was that something you'd like? Or would you like more of a subtleness and bring that out with your meat?
Right.
And then again, it goes with price. And you just, you know, if they like you, most times they're going to be like, sure.
It's going to help.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. And about that, if they like you, there's a better, like,
of course, it's like everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's do you have a like you know, you talk to people in sales and they'll remember, like, I remember my brief period, the one time this one restaurant up at like north of like 404 way up north, selling them a couple grand worth of French wine because their French wine portfolio was lacking, and I'll always remember being able to make that sale. Do you have one of those of the first time where you're like, wow, I can't believe, you know, two bottles of Stag's Leap, and then they had some ice wine afterwards or something.
Oh, yeah. We had one table. They got, I think, two bottles of the Stag's, and then two bottles of cake bread.
Yep.
And, okay, so that's even higher. And champagne.
Ooh, that's a good
one. And then
night.
They left me a glass of each. They're like, come, when you're done your shift, come have like a drink with us.
Yeah.
And like, I think it was this champagne was like a Dom that like's been sitting at the keg forever.
There's Dom at the keg?
I mean, ours had Dom at the, this was like 4 years ago.
Yeah. There must be, I wonder if these kegs, like, do all of them just in the catacombs of their cellars, there's just a couple of these odd,
there's just ones that
bottles.
You have it just in case someone asks for it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't get ordered that. So you have like one or two bottles. This one was like sitting there for a while.
Yeah.
And then finally I sold it. And I think it was something that we're getting it off the menu, or our manager just brought it in because someone was asking for it. Because sometimes you just bring in products, even if it's not on the menu, just depending on your clientele.
Yeah.
And then that person hadn't been coming in anymore, so we were just sitting on this. And so it was this big sale of like me actually pushing it out. And he was like, oh my God, you got rid of it? I was like, yeah, and I'm going to have some. Like, I'm so excited.
Nice. Congrats. That must have been a nice feeling.
Oh, 100%.
So then how did you go from the keg to Moët Hennessy Portfolio Specialist?
Well, I've been looking to decide where I want to go next, because I got to a point where I was like, okay, I don't want to be a manager of the keg. I don't want to be the lifestyle of the inside the restaurant, but I love the atmosphere. I love the industry.
Yeah.
What else can I do? And it took me a while to kind of like decide what I was doing. And then I had a friend of mine who told me that, oh, I have a buddy who works at Chart & Hops. Mm-hmm. And from
and
there.
For people don't know
Chart & Hops.
Chart & Hops. Yeah. They are?
It's a wine and spirit distribution mm-hmm. representation.
Yep.
Yep. All over Canada.
Mm-hmm. And so then they were able to get you in there and yeah. then it just clicked?
Yeah, like I emailed him and he said the position wasn't available yet. And that was like March. And I kept emailing him every month. I was like, I don't know, maybe he forgot about me.
Yeah.
Come June, I was like, this position's filled. They just forgot about me. On to the next. And then he emailed me in August. I was like, position's available. You can come interview for it.
Yeah.
And then I had two interviews and then I got the job. So I started in September.
So you started this past September.
Yeah.
And now you're going to your first massive work trip. Going.
Well, I went to Mexico already for work.
Oh.
We did a every 3 years what they do is they take the company. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's in Mexico or somewhere else. I'm not sure. But we went to Mexico this year. So they take us for a week and we go do brand training with everything. We get to taste everything. We do workshops. We do tests to make sure how we're doing. We do team building activities and things like that. It was really great to meet a lot of the other employees from all around Canada as well. Mm-hmm. And to actually spend some time with my employees that are in Ontario because you don't ever really get to see them other than meetings. Because with sales reps, you're not working with them. You're on your own.
You're on your own.
And to actually sit down and talk about life, not work. Was great.
How difficult a transition was that for you? Just you went from the keg. We talked about staff events and you're there with people and you're working with a team to when you're a sales rep, it can be a very lonely job, just you and your car. How hard a transition was that?
The first couple months was hard just because it's a new role too. So you didn't have anyone to kind of be right beside you doing it with you.
Yeah.
I had another girl who was hired a month prior to me and we'd keep in contact and try to like help each other as much as we could, but it was a little difficult even just going to the restaurants by yourself.
Yeah,
because like I don't ever really do that. So it was good though. It brought in a bit more of like a independence and confidence to kind of do things on my own and not have to rely on anyone else. And then, you know, not going to sleep at 3 a.m. and having to wake up earlier was a little
having
hard.
More of a normal sort of feeling like you're part of the rest of society.
Yeah. I was like, how am I going to juggle this?
Yeah. Do you have a favorite wine or favorite sparkling or just something you've really enjoyed drinking recently?
Recently. Well, I'm our sparkling Chandon Rosé.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's something that we've just got out of a consignment.
Yeah.
And we had a few bottles of that and that I'm really liking that. That rosé is really dry. It's very similar to like a Moët rosé, I would say. Like mm-hmm. it's very like close to that.
Yeah.
And I really love the Moët. So that one's my easy drinking at home all the time. Because even though I work for Moët Hennessy, doesn't mean I've got all these bottles sitting at home for myself.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's not like at the end.
I don't get these discounts that I want things I do.
Yeah. It's like at the end of the day. Would you like some of our, would you like some of the, the vintage, mm-hmm. some of the old back vintage Moët we got out
Yeah.
there?
We have extra cases. Would you like it at home?
Here, could you take? Yeah.
No, doesn't happen.
And last question. Where would you like to see yourself? You've gone from the keg. You're now here. And it's still a fairly new job, like mm-hmm. just 3-4 years down the road. Like, do you see yourself being still within this industry?
I really want to be, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying the sales rep life right now.
Yeah.
Just getting to know the industry and getting to know everyone and all the wines and things like that. And I love doing events and staff education and training. But anything to do with wine, I would love it. Even if I, lived out in the country near a winery and kind of did something out there. Something to do with wine is always, I think, going to be a part of my life.
It's pretty damn good.
Oh, it's amazing.
Hey, Natalie, thank you so much for joining. I always, it's one thing I want about this podcast is people in every different facet related to wine and from wine goes to service and restaurants and sales and your job with portfolio specialists. I really appreciate you joining the show.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the hell out of champagne.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
It's going to be fantastic. You can't see it, everyone, but there is a glow when they say the word champagne.
Oh, it's the best.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can get it on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.